No.
In your mother didn't have ever a black woman in her house.
Yes, she did. She did, Joanna.
Was it stayed with you for a long time or what?
Not so long. When we were very small.
So many children. Well, she needed a bit of...
No, but this was when it was just the three of us. And we lived in Observatory. Mm-hmm. And I was always a very curious child.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents had a washing machine
mm-hmm.
with a mangle on top. I'm not sure what you call the thing that you put the clothes to squeeze the water out of the clothes.
Yeah.
Old-fashioned washing machine, two rubber wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And I put my arm through the mangle. And that time, there was Joanna, she had to run all the way, the house was on the hill, down the hill to where my father was working and come up again. And then I did it again, which wasn't so good. Yes, I remember Joanna. My mother went out to work because they wanted to build a house and buy a car. So the money that my mother earned went into the savings, and she got Joanna. I remember this woman, and I've always loved fat people ever since, because I remember, and this is from 3 years old even, I remember Joanna holding me. She's a big fat woman, but holding me on her lap and just putting her arm. Those women were like mothers to us.
Yeah, but I'm curious to know if your father and your mother ever like told you, you as children, or you with your sister and brothers, something that was, well, it was wrong to think that blacks were different. He just told you how to act with black people, how to...
No, it was, they were, that never was said, anything like that. The people who did come to my parents' house were treated the same way that anybody else was treated, unless it was the man who worked in the garden or the woman who cleaned the house. Because Joanna was only for a little while, and then there was another maid and another maid. But if it was a guest to their house, then that person would be treated in the same way.
As parents, they were giving you some kind of rules or things how to behave in society. In this society, where apartheid was in action, I don't know.
You see, apartheid, if you weren't here, and it's terrible because I know that I am in my way responsible. You were a child, you grew up. The only black person that I knew was a woman that I loved very much, Joanna. My mother is not affectionate. She doesn't hug or anything like that. Joanna was very loving, and I needed somebody.
So you are telling me that as a white person, as a white children, then a woman was not really in a way happening every day. It was not easy to...
You didn't have contact, no. Because even in the bus, it was segregated. The black people had to sit upstairs. The white people sat downstairs. When I finished school in 1970, I was a student nurse. And in the hospital that I worked, the white nurses, we didn't go to work in the wards for the black people. We only worked in the wards for white people. And then things started changing. I think it was in 1978 that the Catholic schools opened doors to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I was already finished school, you see.
Okay.
And as I grew up and became an adult, I met people and formed my own opinion. Perhaps they are different to some others in my family. But for myself, and I can only say it's because of the way that I was brought up, my best friend, my friend of my heart, the one who knows everything, is not a white woman. She's not a white woman. She's not white. But we often call each other sisters because we are very close.
Is she what, Indian or colored?
She's actually Muslim.
Wow. And did you meet her at school or what?
And I met her at my son's school. I met her, her son and my son are the same age, but our boys are not friends. So we decided, you know, often when you have in a school, when the children fight with each other, they don't get on because they're different, then the mothers don't see each other. Soraya and I, we decided a long time ago that we were the friends, not interested if the boys can go and do what they want, but it was our friendship was more important. And there are two women that I'm very close to. One is my cousin Luciana, Santo's daughter, and the other one is Soraya. And sometimes I do worry, because in my parents there's an old attitude, but they never ever told us how to behave or anything like that. Everything, yeah. In fact, my parents have met my friend Soraya, and she thinks that my father is wonderful. And she also is very much aware, she's got a very dark skin. She's also very much aware, of course, because people are in this country. Everybody is telling you all the time, they don't let you forget. And she said to me, because we can say everything to each other, and she said, I was worried about how, you know, I'd be accepted. And she said, your father, she said, made me feel like $1 million. I said, what did he do? She said, he shouted at me. That's fantastic, because you know, if my father shouts at you, it means he loves you. No, it's true, because he was saying, come, you know, hurry up, get on. We were putting the food around, we were putting the food on the table. And he moaned to her as much as to me. So she said, he made me feel like I was, she said to me, he made me feel like I was his daughter. And my father sort of looked at her and said, well, what else can you be? You know, where are your brains? What else?
Oh, well, I can understand it. It should be really hard for him to accept himself in that condition now.
Having
such a really intense life, really demanding and really
giving, it's very it's actually very sad, because he was so determined to walk again. You know, my eldest sister Silvana took him to the doctor last year. It was in November for an examination for my father. And then when they left, Silvana said to the doctor, I need to make an appointment for next year for January. That was January 2008. And the doctor said to Silvana that my father wouldn't live that long. He didn't think he would live more than another month or two. But then he did. And then after that, he fell and he broke his hip and his leg. Then they needed to do something to resolve the situation because he was lying with his hip and the top of his leg smashed. And the doctor, the surgeon said, I can give you two choices. The one is that we do nothing, but you will stay in bed. You will be in bed for the rest of your life. He wouldn't have been able even to sit. He would have had to lie in bed. He said, the other thing is we can do an operation to secure your leg so that you will be able to sit. You may be able to walk with a walker, but the chances of you surviving are only 30%. So, that day, my father called for Father Mario to say his last confession. And when I said goodnight to him, I was sure that I wouldn't see him because he was taking a big chance. He really was. But he was so determined. And it was 30%. He came out of it so much better than the previous thing's heart operation. He came out so well. He just needed some therapy in the hospital. He was very anxious to get home. It is heartbreaking for him, but it's not that he can't walk. For me, for my father, what does break his heart, and I have seen him cry, is when we have to do the things that your child should never have to do. He can't go to the bathroom, you know, things a child should never do too much. And the thing is that I couldn't care, I was a nurse, you know, it's all the same. But for him, it's the terrible humiliation. Because in my mind, he has never been a man of very tall stature. But for me, my father was always a giant. I used to think my father knew everything.
Yeah, well, that's it. So I want to ask you a couple of questions more about. So I don't remember if your father got the South Africa citizenship. Mm. Was it there?
Yes, I think that they were all forced to naturalize.
Yeah, now I remember because I've been interviewing so many people, so I make confusing myself.
He was an enemy alien. He had to go sign at the police station.
One before? No.
And then he became naturalized. Okay. Before. Yeah, when he first arrived. They became the war in 1939. The war started.
He went also in an international camp. Well, I was too young. No, he was too young.
No, he wasn't in the camp. No, was in the camp, yeah.
No. So he became naturalized. But has he ever been involved in politics? Was he talking about South African politics or what?
No.
To you or to the family members?
No.
So he never knew what he was going to vote or what?
You would know that if my parents voted, you would think that they would vote for the English party. You see, in those days, the division, it wasn't black and white.
Sure.
The division was Afrikaans-English.
Yeah.
And the Afrikaans people didn't like the English, and the English people didn't like the Afrikaans. And it was all a big mess.
And maybe for what I can understand, but you can correct me, the Afrikaners were more on the apartheid thing.
Well, they were the ones who put the law into place.
Yes.
But you must never forget, it was when the English ruled in this country that they made sure that people, that black people lived there, coloured people lived there, white people lived there.
Yeah.
There was a separation from the time.
So from
before 1960,
The first blame.
Yes. The Afrikaans don't like the English because they had the Anglo-Boer War and the English lost. In a country like this, but there are a lot of ugly things that came out of the first concentration camps in the world. were in this country during the Anglo-Boer War.
Wow.
And in fact, my husband's grandmother was the product of rape.
Oh.
Her mother had been interned by the English. The English had the concentration camps for the Afrikaans women and their children. And she was raped by a Scottish soldier whose name was Davidson. She still took the name. Yeah. She was raped by a Scottish soldier, and the child then was named Davidson. And so
she kept
him. Yeah. But that was Basil's great grandmother.
So you're talking about the end of the 19th century.
Yes, the beginning of the 1910. Somewhere about the early 19th, Queen Victoria was still on the throne. God, I don't know. Okay. 1899, I think it was. I'm not sure.
So
I was never interested in the Afrikaans history. I never felt any connection to it. And I think that's maybe the thing is, if you can feel a connection, then you will be interested.
But just to let me understand, in those, we are still talking about the period before 1994, yeah? So, whether like more democratic or progressive party that someone could vote for?
Yes, you have the National Party and then you have the United Party. The National Party is the Afrikaans, the United Party is the English. And then people started splitting off and they developed the Progressive Party.
That was your husband's party? No.
Even before.
No,
that was long before. This
was in the 80s,
Yeah, that was never a proper political party.
It was
a disguise. It was really the ANC, but because the ANC was...
That wasn't allowed, so...
Yeah, you see, so
that... Side, like...
It was a cover.
Like in Ireland, the IRI and...
Yes. But you had the Progressive Party. But this is from the 50s and the 60s, 1950, 1960. No, wait, we became a republic in 1961.
Yeah.
And then the Progressive Party is sometime later.
Mm-hmm.
That party has now...
Mm-hmm.
become the Democratic Party.
Okay.
The Democratic, the DA, I think it's called the DP. They changed their names too many times. So there was a division between Afrikaans and English. And even the Afrikaans people stayed in a different place. The Afrikaans people lived in the northern suburbs. That's where Bepina lives. I don't know if you went to Bepina.
No, she told us where she lived.
But you find more Afrikaans people there.
Okay.
Where I live in Rondebosch, possibly because the university and schools as well, it's very English. Very few Afrikaans people.
Okay. Just one last thing about that. So, did your father never regret taking the South African citizenship?
I don't know. He's never, as far as I know, he was forced to naturalize.
But with that, he lost his home in those periods.
Yes, but he had no choice because he had to work, you see.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I think that if you had to be South African citizen to do certain things.
Actually, to work for the government as it is probably.
It's very possible.
But
But the minute that the Italian government changed things.
Yeah, and then later.
He was there straight away.
Okay.
Yeah.
You already also had got as US children who got the Italian passport, yeah?
I have citizenship, yes. And they never got the passport.
Ah, you need a passport.
Because, you know, to get the passport would cost me, for you it doesn't sound like much. For you it's probably about 100 euros. For me it's 1,000 rand. It's just about 1,000 rand. And passport? Yeah. Where am I going to go?
Yeah.
What country? I'm not going to, I've got no money to travel. So when I need to travel, I will go and get it, because now the visa fees, if I travel with a South African passport, the visa fees for Italy are almost as much as to apply for. But no, I have the citizenship, I just don't have the passport.
And of your sisters?
All of them.
Citizenship, but also the...
And I'm sure they've all got their passports as well, and the husbands and their children have all got their passports. You see, in this country at one stage, if you could get the passport of another country, you were okay.
Yeah.
But, and you're not supposed to have two passports. Here, you can't. The South Africa doesn't recognize dual
like
nationality.
Okay. It is. So it's that, but you don't have to show it or tell anybody about.
No, what you do is you leave the country with your South African.
Yeah,
then you get to that country,
say
to England. But from England you can go to Italy. But of course you can't arrive in Italy another passport.
It's interesting telling that the South African government doesn't officially accept the double passports, because that step was made by Italy only recently in the 90s. But one last thing I didn't ask you. So when was the first time you went to visit your parents' home country?
I've been to Italy, but I've only been to Rome and to Venice. I've never been to Rome.
When was that that you made a trip to Italy?
My daughter was a travel agent. And she said to me, Mommy, I can get a special and it would cost, I think it was 900 rand in those days, it's less than 10 euros.
Mom, when was
and
that?
This was about 4 or 5 years ago.
Only so recently?
Very recently, for the first time.
So the point for this question is this. What impressions did you have from that trip?
I came back with a determination. There is something that I have been saying for a long time. I would like to leave. I'd like to leave here. I want to go and live in Italy. But my parents are still alive. And I can't leave my parents. But, so I say now, I want to die in Italy. I would like to die in Italy.
You are thinking this?
Yes. I would like to, if I can't live there, I would like to end my life there. Right. I would like to die there.
How long was that travel that you did?
We were only for 3-4 weeks. It wasn't long. It wasn't long. Not enough.
But don't you have relatives up there in the north, or your mothers?
But you see, I'm the only one in the family who doesn't have any money. We've got no money, Basil and me. So there's no money for travelling. And even to go from Rome to Venice. Yeah.
Yeah, that's 70, 80 euros, actually, by train. It's quite expensive. Even for us, it's expensive, I tell you.
But compared to this country, train travel was much cheaper. And I was amazed. I got onto the train and it was clean and the seats hadn't been ripped. In Italy, but it was a train that was going from Rome to Venice.
Uh-huh.
So it was a long distance train. I'm not sure. Beautiful big windows, and for the first time in my life, I saw snow.